Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
8 o'clock hour with the Hump Day edition.
Hump Day.
No time to waste here on Sean and RJ, your home of the Texas Rangers and the Dallas Cowboys. Sean Treif, RJ Choppy, Cowboys insider Bobby Belt. And we got Peyton Russell in the back firing up the fan cam, Twitch and YouTube. Be careful driving out there. It is messy. It is nasty. Mike McCarthy is not going to be coaching this upcoming NFL season. The word coming out from Tom Pelissero that McCarthy, that's his guy, by the way, in the media, one of his peeps, McCarthy did not garner the interest from the Saints that he thought he would. That was from Jordan Schultz. Pelissero, he's going to be a little bit more diplomatic and say he's going to focus his attention on next year. Expected to be a strong candidate. Jordan Schultz says did not get the interest that he anticipated. It's starting to seem like Kellen Moore is the leader in the clubhouse. McCarthy backs out before being shut out. And Josina Anderson yesterday in Crosstalk reported that there seemed to be a little tug of war and disagreement over what McCarthy wanted and the Saints front office was willing to give.
Yeah, and now we'll see where they wind up going with their head coaching search if Kellen says no, because there's a, I mean, if you're going to go in there, they have cap hell and they have no quarterback. I would absolutely try to wrestle power away, right? Like if New Orleans' front office has put them in this position where you have no cap, you don't, I mean, you got some dudes there, but you don't have a ton and you don't have a quarterback. I don't know, man. It's like, why would, if you're going to go in there as a head coach, you'd be like, why would I not try to do this? You guys have obviously failed over the last few years.
Which, by the way, I'd like to point out that the New Orleans situation is from administrative or financial switches being flipped and maneuvers that are the same ones that people keep going. You could get $100 million here in Dallas.
Gentlemen.
You get $100 million here in Dallas, you're going to be New Orleans in a couple of years. That's what will happen. That's how this whole situation works.
That's all Orlovsky says about the Cowboys on TV now. How are you going to compete next year? You got a $90 million Dak Prescott hit. That's all he says. Rinse and repeat. Rinse and repeat. Rinse and repeat. Should Sean Payton be blamed for that, by the way?
I mean, they were pretty, like, Sean Payton was the big decision maker there, but I mean, they were pretty, like, close in terms of the way they operated with Mickey Loomis and things like that. I think that's definitely a organizational-wide screw-up, or maybe not even a screw-up. A lot of teams will do that intentionally. They'll say, this is our window, it's open, we're going to take the chance here, and we'll have to take a path in a couple years if we need to.
Bobby, for this hiring cycle, you win. You are correct in Mike McCarthy not getting another job, and I don't think he coaches as a head coach in the National Football League again. And now, possibly Kellen Moore.
Well, now possibly Kellen Moore. It depends on what he does, but what would have been worse? Let's just say the New Orleans job that Mike did not pull his name out.
This is a great question.
Well, thank you. What would have been worse for Cowboy fans? McCarthy goes to New Orleans and succeeds, or Kellen goes to New Orleans and succeeds?
Ooh!
Like, what's worse, the stomach?
I would say Kellen, and how are we defining success?
I think New Orleans' success is different. It's probably like make the playoffs.
Okay.
You're right, you know what I mean? Like, they're not
in Kellen. Kellen's worse. Mike, you felt like you saw it for 5 years. And yeah. You're like, oh, it wasn't working here. Kellen, you never got the chance to see what he would do when he ran it.
That was my answer, if you let me finish.
But, yeah.
I retweet that answer.
Yeah, I think, look, obviously, if the Cowboys miss the playoffs next year and New Orleans makes it with either one of them, both would have been bad.
If you have a healthy Dak, dude, if you have a healthy disastrous. Dak, yeah.
The long-term hurt, obviously, would be with Kellen, because who knows? I mean, he could be their next Sean Payton. The short-term hurt, I think, might be McCarthy, because, like, if you miss the playoffs next year, you could have brought him back. You wanted to bring, it seems like you wanted to bring him back. I think that would hurt the short term, but long term,
it would have been Kellen, I think, short term. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, if Kellen does go to New Orleans and have success like Sean Payton, like you're saying, there, I don't know how Jerry stomachs that. Like, if Jerry goes, like, the two assistants that he was just enamored with, of just like, oh my gosh, what genius is there? And then they go to New Orleans, both of them, and have a run. That would be tough.
What did you make of the way they talked about McCarthy in the press conference the other day?
I thought they were definitely trying to, they wanted to set a tone. Or they wanted to drop just little bits of information that said, "We're this is our counter to what's being said about how those negotiations went." Because it's been consistently said, Mike McCarthy got upset basically and said, screw you guys, gives him the middle finger, walks out the door and leaves him hanging. And then the Cowboys are like, what are we to do? Cowboys, definitely, Jerry and Steven seemed like they wanted to leave everybody with the impression that what Mike McCarthy wanted was irrelevant because we wanted him to be gone. That's what we wanted. That's what we had determined. And these were two of the quotes that you had in there. Jerry said, it was time for a change. I've heard it criticized. We spent 5 days getting to come to that decision. We did come to that decision. One of the reasons we came to that decision is because there was this decision available to us as well. Basically saying, we picked Schottenheimer over McCarthy. That's what we wanted. Steven said, we just felt like, Jerry felt like, I was supportive of it, that we needed change. Like, that's their whole position has not been, they did not entertain a single idea in this press conference that Mike is the one that walked away. They positioned it the entire time as just, this was us, this is what we wanted to do. And when you start talking about, hey, we needed change, but maybe some continuity, but we really need change. And Schottenheimer, they're talking about, man, he had to bite his lip about some of the things Mike was doing. And these references constantly by all three of them to damaged or broken culture or things that needed to be repaired in the culture. I thought they were subtly throughout that hour and 10 minutes trying to go, we weren't the problem here. And we had determined this was the problem, regardless of how it's being spun now. Is that accurate? Is that totally accurate that that's the way it played out? I don't know. You hear people say McCarthy got pretty frustrated and walked out. But the Cowboys are wanting to position it, it seems, as though we had determined Mike McCarthy was no longer going to work here.
Well, yeah, they're going to want to position it that way so they don't look foolish, because everyone thinks, in our minds, we're imagining Mike giving them the middle finger that he embarrassed the Joneses, and they're never used to be told, they're not used to being told no, and Mike did it. So I'm sure that eats at Jerry's craw, and he wants to fight back at that notion.
Yeah, that notion, like the fact that that even exists, whether it would be true or not, Jerry, I'm sure, would be annoyed that that would be the perception.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, no, I'm the one that's in control here. I still say the fact that that whole week, when you hear some of the people that talk about how those negotiations went, that they weren't even negotiations that whole week. It was just talking about generalized things. Contract never came up. We get the report Friday, like, they're going to try to come to an agreement. Then all of a sudden Monday, there's nothing. That felt like they were operating in a way of just, you know, just go, Mike. Mike, you going to go? Like, I still feel like this was a let's make him quit type of move, and that McCarthy did, to his credit. McCarthy is the one that walked away, but I felt like the Cowboys were trying to corner him into that.
Man, that's... I mean, it might be it might fit the MO of they don't want to hurt feelings around here.
Just make the move and say,
yeah,
like, you're not our guy. You're leaving me with the impression still that you would have taken him back under the right circumstances for you. Like, why, if that's true, why are you playing all these stupid games?
I think
separate.
I think the right circumstances for them were Jason Witten on staff and
a 2-year deal,
like something like that, just basically getting him prepared to take over. And that's probably why McCarthy's like, no. It's like, all right, well, these are literally the only terms we'll accept you
and
on.
And Shoddy call the plays.
Yeah, and these are literally the only terms that we're going to accept you on is if it's like this. And McCarthy's going like, well, those are not even, that's not even a starting point. No, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. My leftovers from the presser, Jerry and Steven, Atolo put it correctly, Chuck, interviewing for the Cowboys coaching job has to be the easiest in the NFL. Just tell them how awesome they are. Boom. Job. As Jerry and Steven were like, yeah, the other people that we spoke with, they were telling us, you know, we're so close. We're right there. We're around the rim. We're right on the cusp. And it's like, okay, that's a little bit delusional. This is the best way we can get to the playoffs and win. He talked about cap ramifications when you have injured players. I do real well managing the cap. We obviously haven't done it well enough. So what does that mean? What did that mean, cap ramifications for injured players? When you tie up all that money in your quarterback, then that robs you of your depth?
I assume what he's saying...
If your quarterback gets hurt?
Yeah, I assume what he's saying there is just when all that money that you've invested to contribute then gets hurt, like, you might as well just not even have that money. It's just, it's right. It's basically like dead money for that year on your salary cap. Or, I mean, he could be talking about players that just break down due to injury that then they have to move on from. Somebody like Zach Martin might be facing that.
One of the things that Jerry also seems to detest is a timeline. He hates. Yeah. Jane Slater asked it, what about your timeline? And Jerry said, where's the clock? Where's the clock in here? I don't see no clock.
Right.
That Dak had nothing to do with the hire. They didn't talk to Dak about the hire. Okay.
Which I just want to point out, Pro Football Talk just reported about an interview that Dak did on the Cowboys website. And he said that the Cowboys were looking for continuity, but that he spoke on the man he's been in these three that he's been in with these 3 years, how consistent he's been. And as I've said, through the highs and the lows, you can only gain respect from somebody that at that point. So yeah, it was easy for me to speak on. So Dak made it sound like he at least gave them some sort of feedback, even if he wasn't consulted on the decision.
Yeah, this was. I mean, the whole process was a huge win for Dak. Huge win. I mean, on the surface, it looks like that he flexed some muscle
in the building. Yeah, it's going to make fans dislike him more who are not fans of him,
right?
Because it's being called a Dak hire,
which Dak says 4 year contract for Schottenheimer, 4 year contract for me. He's like, we're clearly tied to the hip. This is we're going to rise or fall together here.
Jerry called Steve.
Do we know the money, by the way?
What's that?
Do we know the money?
No. I have not heard. Jerry called Steve Spurrier, asking about Shoddy as a player. Calling up Pete Carroll. Why'd you fire him?
it was kind of awkward there for a second.
Kind of blunt.
If you loved him so much, why'd you fire this guy?
Yeah.
Like, just to very publicly remind everyone, hey, Shoddy was fired from the last job like this.
Let me tell you, I give it around a 40% chance that Steve Spurrier had no idea who Brian Schottenheimer was.
Well, if Shoddy played defense, it was a 20% chance. He didn't know the Washington Redskins.
He had no idea. I think it was Javon Kearse said, I'd never really even met Steve Spurrier when he was playing at Florida.
That's the type of advice that's scary, though, that Jerry takes.
Yeah.
Like, who the hell cares? Unless Steve Spurrier has been in close contact with Brian Schottenheimer over the past 5 years, what does it matter what Brian Schottenheimer did under Steve Spurrier, like playing
as the backup quarterback to Danny Werfel.
he didn't even play. If you allowed that, I almost think Jerry goes to the Rolodex and is like, oh, that's a name. Let me call him.
I think he played like week one or week zero. Werfel was hurt or something. I think he played like one game there, like in the title year of 96.
I mean, honestly, to be fair, like Jerry has consistently said he will just call hundreds of people about a subject. It's like, oh, I call everybody. I talk to everybody, which I believe. I think he does just talk to random people about stuff.
On fans being mad, again, this is why he keeps referencing the buying the Cowboy days, because he's like, I went through it then, I can go through it now, holding on to 30-year memories or longer. He said, I went to school on negative fan comments. How do you think it was when I got rid of Landry? How do you think it was when I bought the team? Right? This hillbilly from Arkansas. This cold-blooded dummy getting rid of America's coach. I was told I needed to resign to get the stadium. So he looks at overcoming all those things as justification for doing the things that he does now. And the buying the Cowboys story gives him his resolve that he just hangs on to.
Does he use it for justification? And I'm just trying to play devil's advocate on this one. Does he use it for justification, or do you think he's saying, I've missed before, but there are these other instances, so I've got my reasons and my process. So I'm just saying, you guys have been wrong about my process before, and my process
above.
Can be right.
All the above. On him and Steven working together, this was reporters trying to poke around, like, why are you guys running things? He said, we have a good working relationship. We don't always agree. Proper deference, and I can be a bully. He could be a bully towards Steven. And why didn't you wait until after the conference championship games to talk with Kellen Moore? Steven said there was no need to. They had zeroed in on Schottenheimer after meeting with Kellen the first time. And, of course, I was told that Kellen bombed the interview. So there's your full recap. Inside the Stars, Mike McCarthy will not be coaching this year. Will it be Kellen Moore in New Orleans?
If he bombed, isn't that the book on Kellen, though, that he just doesn't interview well? And if that's the case, what happened? Like, what if he interviewed really poorly in New Orleans? And they're like, we can't hire him.
Because Joe Brady's not a name. Who else is a name for New Orleans? Who's in the running?
I think
it's just Kellen.
Kellen's the last identified candidate that hasn't either bowed out or gotten hired.
All right. It is a Meet Church Wednesday with Matt Pittman. What's it like cooking for the first family of Waco? How many political followers did he lose? And why the heck did he cook chili with beans in the state of Texas? Matt Pittman live on the Fan Camp Twitch and YouTube, Odyssey app, and of course your radio next. This is a must hear Meet Church Wednesday with Matt Pittman live on the Fan Cam, Twitch, and YouTube here on DFW Sports Station 105.3 The Fan. Sean Treif, RJ Choppy, and our Cowboys insider Bobby Belt, and he is the official pitmaster of the Dallas Cowboys. So we have to start off asking your thoughts on the new head coach.
I figured you'd ask me that. I've been thinking, like, it doesn't matter what any of us think. You know, we're at the point where it's just going to matter what happens on the field. Like, there's going to have to be results or not. I've mixed emotions about it. I mean, the people that I know within the organization, the players, they are very happy about it. And, like, you know, some of the players, I feel like, you know, I'm going to say they're my guys. And if they're that excited, then there's a reason for it. You know, I think amongst the fan base, it's certainly not a very sexy hire with the other names that were flying out there. And, you know, I liked a lot of the stuff that you guys were talking about yesterday and with Ross on saying, you know, good or bad coordinator doesn't necessarily mean good or bad head coach. We don't know. I know he's, you know, a well-spoken guy, is going to get people fired up. So, you know, I'm an optimistic kind of guy. I'm also a Cowboys apologist. So I'm just hopeful because it's crazy how long it's been. I mean, to watch that game last weekend, you got a Commanders fan that works for me. And he asked me who I would be rooting for last weekend. And I said, I don't know, maybe for both teams to get like near-death food poisoning. It's turned me off from football that I have an invite to the Super Bowl and I don't even think I'm going to go. Wow. Like, football's done. I'm on to next season.
What would the invite be to do? In what capacity?
One of my brand partners is sponsoring an athlete with a house, bringing a lot of people through for a podcast and things like that. So have me there for the day, doing a little food, coming on the podcast, going to the game. I mean, look, it'd be exciting, but I'm just gonna turn football off, and you guys can catch me come training camp next year.
All right, so I've been waiting 2 weeks to ask the results. Well, I've been waiting 2 weeks to ask you a lot of things, but we'll save the lightning rod for the end. Chili with beans. How did this come about? What happened with the video and reaction? A big Texas crime.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So I think I might have mentioned to you guys that I ran a poll asking, like, who likes beans and who doesn't? So, like, take my opinion out of it. And the slight majority was they preferred beans. Doesn't mean it's my preferred way. So I thought, well, you know, I got customers of all types. I should have a recipe and video on it. So we put that out last week. It was very well received, but it was your typical response you would expect, to be honest with you. Like, I truly think beans versus no beans is the most polarizing topic in food. And you had all kinds of people that called me out for being a sellout. And I'm like, I just made it. I didn't say I loved it. But the end result, you know, I jokingly said it's good because I cooked it. It, you know, it was good. I can see why people do it. I know a lot of the origin was to make the pot go further. I don't think it needs it. I still prefer meat over beans in mine. And, you know, what's funny is all of our chili videos blow up. This one has not. Oh. So maybe my hardcore fan base is with me. I don't know. I mean, it's done average views over the course of the past week because we have a new one coming out today. So I just checked it. But the comments were definitely very lit, nonetheless. You can go to my Instagram today, see a little short version of the video and get a taste for what it's all about.
See, I am a no beans, but it doesn't mean the beans in it isn't good. It's just, I don't know what to call it. You can't call it chili.
Mm. Like, it's a
I actually
dish.
Agree with that.
It's a different dish.
I didn't know. I'm with Choppy. I don't know if you call it soup, stew, whatever, but I actually didn't even know what to name this recipe because I was trying to come up with like a clickbaity thing. Like, normally I'd be like, the most delicious, whatever. And I wasn't going to put delicious in front of chili with beans. I couldn't do that.
What type of beans?
I also ran a poll on what beans do you use if you like beans, and I used two of the top three. Number one was kidney beans, and number three was pintos. That's what I used. Number two was black beans. So I used one and three. A lot of people say the pintos for the texture because you kind of smash them and you So those are the two that I went with.
What about coffee beans? I wonder how coffee beans would be in that.
Probably would not taste great.
You don't think so?
I wouldn't think so. We're talking Matt Pittman here on 105.3 Fan. Okay, Matt, so you mentioned there, you said you think beans or no beans is the most controversial thing. What are like a couple other things that people just get rabid over when it comes to the kitchen or with your cooking where it's like, oh no, that it's got to be this way or that way?
There's a few others that come to mind really quickly. One is cornbread. Do you put sugar in it or not? And it's pretty much how you were raised, I think. Crawfish is, I wouldn't say it's polarizing, but pretty much if you're not from Louisiana, Cajuns don't think you can cook it. You guys know we've talked about Philly cheesesteaks on here as well. If you make a Philly cheesesteak and you're not from the area and an expert, they think you're an idiot. And to a little lesser degree, buffalo wings. I don't hear that as much lately, but years ago, if we'd ever make wings, they'd be like, that's not a buffalo wing. So those are the tops that I see the most.
What about barbecue sauce on brisket?
Oh yeah, I mean certainly. Like, you know, here we say good barbecue doesn't need sauce. So there's, you know, some barbecue joints didn't even used to have sauce on their table. Like Lockhart Smokehouse when they opened, I don't know if they still do this, but they didn't even offer barbecue sauce. So. I definitely agree with that. Like when we go cater, you know, we have to take sauce because there's going to be somebody there that wants sauce, but, I usually forget it because I don't think it needs it.
All right. My wife has been waiting long enough. This is her, you know, probably first Meat Church segment she's tuning into because you cooked for the first family of Waco, Chip and Joanna.
Oh yeah, Gaineses.
How did that happen?
Man, that was awesome. So I had forgotten that one of my long friends of 20 plus years that I've played hockey with forever, Bob Braun, is actually Chip's brother-in-law. So Bob's wife reached out to me in the fall and said, you know, my family's really hard to buy for. My dad and husband have attended one of your classes. Would you be interested in coming to the Gaines Ranch and teaching them? And I'm like, yeah, I've wanted to meet them forever. A lot of people, I'm certainly nowhere near their level, but a lot of people that come through Waxahachie compare what we do for Waxahachie to the Gaines in Waco. And there's just similarities. And if you ever go to Meat Church Barbecue Supply on a Saturday, the amount of couples that are in there and the guys say, we're headed to the silos. And she said, I could stop here. It's crazy. So I've always wanted to do it. They were definitely on my short list, and it was super cool. And what was really awesome was I let them request the menu, and Joanna asked for wild game. So we went out and shot a wild hog and deer because those are two things they wanted to see. And we prepared that as well as some barbecues. So, and by the way, they were amazing. They're like the coolest people. I'm like, I wish I lived next door to Chip. He was cool as hell.
They're one of those couples where I'm rooting for something to happen.
Oh, God.
They're too perfect.
What?
It can't be. It can't be. It can't be true. They can't be that perfect. He's got an amazing, funny personality. She's like, you know, kind of the leader, but she rolls her eyes at the comedy. I'm like, it's too good to be true.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's exactly what I saw. Like, he was looking at her like, he kept saying, one thing I know about my 50 years on this earth is a woman's place is in the kitchen, and she just roll her eyes.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, Bobby's going to watch their show now.
I'm down.
Matt Pittman, it's a Meat Church Wednesday here on 105.3 The Fan.
All right, I got a question I've been wanting to ask you for a couple of weeks. I saw this. I can't remember what it was. I can't remember even what was being cooked. How do you cold smoke something? What is that?
Well, so cold smoking, and some people don't use the term properly, but cold smoking would be where you're putting smoke on something, but it's not going to let's use cheese for an example. If you smoke cheese at 225 degrees, the cheese is going to melt. So cold smoking could be like, let's stick with the cheese example. You could buy a smoke tube, something that you put pellets or wood chips in and you light it. So it smolders and smokes, but there's really no heat coming out of it. And so the cheese would get all that smoke, but it wouldn't melt. People do that with obviously fish, things like salmon. And then in the barbecue world, there's a lot of people that say they cold smoke their meat before they smoke it. I don't think that term is used exactly correctly, but what they mean is, let's say you're cooking a brisket this weekend, put the brisket in your smoker at a really low temperature. So as low as it can go. 165, 170, 180, whatever, just to put smoke on it. So that brisket is taking on that smoke before you start hitting it with a high heat. Technically, when you're, I don't know what the delineation is of what is cold smoking temperature wise, like is it 150 or below? I don't know the exact number. But when you're just under 200, that's not technically cold smoking because that would melt cheese, but that's what's meant by it.
What's today's video?
Man, I've gone off script today, and it's crazy good. I made creamy, delicious potato soup, and it has, I did cook it outside. It has nothing to do with cooking outside, so you can make it inside on your stove. But the reason I did the video, I make a lot of comfort food through the winter. And when I made this, my wife said, this is the best thing you've made in a year. And I'm, and I've only gotten, she's only given me 4 compliments on my food in my life. So I ran with that one. But it's so good that I made it for all my friends. All we've got like couples that we hang out with, and we I made it for all of them a couple of days ago. I made like 25 batches of this soup. It was crazy. But it is crazy, crazy good. You crisp up some bacon in a Dutch oven, pull the bacon out, put some vegetables in, cook it down, add chicken stock, add cream, add milk, add cubed up potatoes, smash them when you're done. One of the keys, Meat Church Blanco, I don't know what it is about that seasoning, but I season it with that, and then I put some on top of the bowl, garnish it with cheese, the bacon you cooked, green onions. Make this for your other halves, and you will be... You will win some sort of major award or pass or prize or whatever you're looking for. It's damn good.
I'm gonna have to drive down to Waxahachie and get some more Blanco because I'm running out now. We've been abusing the usage of that nonstop.
I'll tell you what, Bobby. I'll send you some.
There we go.
That's what I was angling for the whole time.
Okay, I love that you are not afraid. I didn't know that you would bring this up as a topic, but last time you were on, we asked about you cooking for the Trump family and all the reactions that would bring. What happened after you posted evidence of that?
You know, I brought it up because I figured you'd want to know because, you know, it was cool that you asked me that day. Are you going to put it out there? Are you afraid of it? And I think that's what a lot of people are thinking. I mean, I know it is. And, you know, yeah, so I put it out there that I cooked for Eric Trump's birthday, had an amazing time. I can't say any bad thing about him. And the day after I posted it, we checked and we lost 5,000 followers. We had like 916,000 on Instagram and we lost 5,000 that day. And then it bled about 250 a day for just over a week, which we never have days where we lose. So I know it was all related to it. You know, people were just losing their minds in the comments. It's sad, to be honest with you. I said, don't make this political. I cook for people on both sides of the aisle, but I knew that their name's super polarizing and it wouldn't matter. But it was kind of nuts because my 13-year-old daughter started getting at people, and I don't let her comment on stuff, but she bodied an old man, which was pretty funny. My wife died in all. My wife got called a bimbo trophy wife by the end of it. So,
damn.
Yeah. Yeah, it's people have lost their minds. They certainly don't have any decency. But the good news is we're back on the uptick. We're gaining them. So if you're listening, go to Instagram, follow Meat Church. We need you.
Until the beans and chili. Then he started losing 10,000 a day.
Beans and chili. He's the Snoop of the cooking world.
Do you regret it?
No, I don't. Because, we thought about it leading up to it. My wife asked me, how are you going to handle this? Because his dad was supposed to be there. And, you know, so she assumed, like, how are you going to handle this on the business? And I said, look, if I can cook for the, leader of the free world, I'm down. Now, it is the third most liked photo we have ever posted. So there's that.
Okay. I hate the way the world is.
Yeah.
I don't care who the president is. If they ask me to play golf, I'm going to go play.
100%. Like I cook to bring people. We call it Meat Church. It's about bringing people together to make great memories around good food. I'm going to cook for whoever's in office if that happens. Yep. So, and I'm hopeful that it does, but I hate the fact that we're like wired to hate each other now. Like we used to be able to have differences. So, I'm not about that. So
props to you, brother. I'm proud of you for doing it and sticking with it. The potato soup video drops today and Bobby and Choppy will be waiting for their Blanco. It's a Meat Church Wednesday with Matt Pittman. Thank you, brother.
Boys.
Matt Pittman on the D&M Leasing Hotline, live on the Fan Cam, Twitch, and YouTube. What does Will McClay have to say about the Cowboys' new hire? A lot of criticism about this team is it's not the same from top to bottom. Listen to what Will McClay has to say about that. Next and Below the Belt. The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby Belt is an idiot.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not.
Over to you, Bobby.
What does the man with the highest approval rating among Cowboys fans have to say about the guy who might have the lowest right now? Probably not the lowest, just the most uncertainty in Brian Schottenheimer. Will McClay talked at Senior Bowl yesterday. They were out in Mobile, Alabama. And I always feel like Will McClay talking is really funny because when you get Jerry and Steven and all the McCarthy, whoever else, when they talk so frequently. There's just this kind of air about it of like, all right, well, we got to check this box. Let's ask about this. Da-da. When Will McClay speaks so infrequently, a couple times a year, that when the reporters get him, it's so funny just how it feels like every question is very calculated. Like, man, we got to really make sure we don't waste this opportunity because Will doesn't ever talk. And so we got to take advantage of this. So he was speaking at Senior Bowl yesterday, and he had an interesting quote that got a lot of traction in the evening, and I want to get y'all's thoughts on this. This was Will McClay being asked about, what do you think about the Brian Schottenheimer hire, and more specifically, how does the organization as a whole benefit from Brian Schottenheimer being the head coach?
I think that's the greatest part, is being aligned from top down, and that's one of the commitments that we all made sitting in there about what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. You know, it starts with ownership coming down, but Shotty's got a plan, got a vision. We're going to support that, and then what we'll do is continue to, you know, add good players. I have a great feeling about Shotty, what he's looking for. He's going to communicate. He's going to over-communicate. He's going to ask his staff to do that, and they're going to over-communicate with us, and we're going to over-communicate with them. That's how we're going to get it done the first year, and we'll continue to grow and get better at it.
So before I get accused sometimes of leading witnesses, so I'm not going to do that. Your two takeaways on what you hear from Will McClay there.
Well, I don't have two. I have one major one.
Oh, I meant one and one, too.
Oh, we all made a commitment in that room to be aligned from top to bottom. What does that mean? That screams out of my headphones when I just heard that. What did Brian Schottenheimer say? What promises needed to be made? What was missing in that alignment? As we've heard that word numerous times throughout the coaching hiring process this offseason, it sounded like someone needed to bring up, yo, this is a problem here. We all made a commitment to be aligned top to bottom. I like it, but why did that need to be said? And who said it?
Yeah, my general take on these things is like, when I hear people in organizations speak, it's the Charlie Brown, because they just are telling you what they want you to hear. You know what I mean? They're putting on the united front.
Yeah,
it happens with every new coach. It's like, well, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. You know, we're going to be this, we're going to be that. And it's just a lot of noise. Like, you can't tell me they weren't aligned when they won 36 games in 3 years.
Why not?
Yeah, why?
I mean, because it does. How? What are you missing?
I mean, wouldn't a lack of alignment and some of those things explain if you were having just massive January issues of showing up for games or like big game moments where you guys had trouble? I think there's. I'm not saying it's definitely equals, you know, I mean, this, but I mean, I think there is absolutely a scenario where you can win 12 games 3 years in a row and there are inherent problems.
There's lipstick that can cover up, you know,
sure,
a lot of pigs. I mean, Michael Jordan covered up things and Tom Brady covered up things because of their greatness. And they still didn't come close to getting the job done, mission accomplished. So your alignment wasn't good enough to sniff a title.
Because maybe they overachieved. Like, they definitely overachieved the last year. That was not a 12-win team. The last year. Dak carried them.
Yeah.
That was not a 12. That was a 9-win team.
I don't know. I just don't feel like Will McClay. That wasn't a generic media statement, especially listen to me. Will McClay is pretty generic. No offense. Sorry. I'm just being honest. I'd like to have you on at the combine, Will.
He's just a personnel guy. He's like the football version of zeros and ones.
Very very generic, very safe.
That I get it.
He just looks at things very. This is the way it is.
My eyebrow went up listening to that. It's a good eyebrow raise because they do need to be more aligned. The big criticism around here all the time is one's doing this and you can go behind the other person's back and Jerry's doing his own thing and the coach, you know, and that type of confusion is a common critique of this organization.
Yeah, I guess the way I should have explained it is, and I think this happens everywhere, when you move on from a regime, whether it's from the GM, whether it's from the coach, whether it's from the quarterback, You know, you want to make your what you have now look the best you possibly can. And you just scapegoat and crap on whatever was there before. That was the problem. Now we got rid of the problem. Now it's smooth sailing. And the same thing with Jason. Did the same thing with Wade.
Yeah.
And with Bill. They did it with they do it with everybody. There is one problem with this organization. It's not the quarterback and it's not the head coach. It's not.
I guess I'm hoping that this was more directed towards ownership and not a shot towards Mike. That's what I'm hoping that comment. Play the comment again, please, Peyton, from Will McClay.
I think that's the greatest part is being aligned from top down, and that's one of the commitments that we all made sitting in there about what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. You know, it starts with ownership coming down, but Shotty's got a plan, got a vision. We're going to support that, and then what we'll do is continue to, you know, add good players. I have a great feeling about Shotty, what he's looking for. He's going to communicate. He's going to over-communicate. He's going to ask his staff to do that, and they're going to over-communicate with us, and we're going to over-communicate with them. That's how we're going to get it done the first year, and we'll continue to grow and get better at it.
What do you think it means?
So there are a couple of different ways that I think you can look at it. One is the way that you were just talking about there, is that is he speaking on his analysis of what he comes away thinking the Joneses have committed to? Of just like, hey, you know what? Maybe we haven't done as good of a job of being in lockstep as and creating enough continuity. We talk about continuity all the time, but maybe there needs to be better continuity here from top down in organizational structure. I think that's very well could be what he's talking about. I think it's also possible what he's talking about is Will McClay generally, when he's talking about things, I think talks about things through the lens of what is my job of acquiring players and building roster and how I function with coach and, you know, owner and general manager and how my role fits into that. Regardless of which one of those two it was, I think what Will McClay's inferring here or talking about is that In the recent years, Will McClay has felt like his role was not totally in lockstep from top to bottom consistently enough. That he felt like the things that he wanted to do and he wanted to accomplish, there wasn't enough alignment. There was too much fracturing or disagreement. Even if they were small things, they were small enough that it caused maybe them not to be as effective as they were. And, I mean, look, we've seen there were different arguments in the war room over picking certain players. There's obviously discussions about, you know, when you pick a Tyler Smith, for instance. We know Joe Philbin didn't want Tyler Smith. All right, well, that's coaching staff kind of not being on the same page with scouting and different things like that.
Which people should and will have different draft opinions.
Mm-hmm. Sure, 100%.
Will McClay's opinion seems wrong compared to what Mike McCarthy wanted for Mozzie Smith.
Well, like, I mean, Bergeron's not been good either.
Okay.
The guy that he wanted. But, I mean, they were also picking 26 or whatever they were. But I think
so.
No, I'm saying that where they were at, they were not. It's not like they were at a top 10 position to where, like, it's not surprising necessarily that two of the people, both of them they were arguing about, they didn't pan out. Like, that's not necessarily
I look at it as they missed on their first round pick. So.
Sure, but I mean,
first round is first round.
Yeah, no, I get 100%.
It's still a first round pick.
Yeah, I get 100%. I'm just saying it's not Taco and Watt, for instance. But I think that Will McClay feels like he is in better lockstep with how to build the roster with the vision that Brian Schottenheimer has. And I think that he feels like he's got a better understanding. At the very least, he feels like he understands it better. Like, he mentions their communication. He feels like he knows the parameters and that it's not shifting, that there's not any movement, that he can reliably count on, this is what I need to look for, this is what I need to find. Will McClay had some other things to say. He was asked about, specifically after he said that, they said, all right, well then how does this process for you guys? How do things change for you with a new coach? And then he kind of expanded on it and started talking about how their process has changed during the NIL era.
What we're trying to do is continue to drive ourselves to look for not only the best players, athletes, all that stuff, but the guys that have the mental that, you know, that it's going to take for us to get over the top, paying more closer attention to the kind of the football character and those things and seeing if they fit that way as well.
Is that any sort of change, the character side from the McCarthy?
No, not really. Guys emphasize it. Each coach is going to emphasize it a little bit more, but I think as an organization and on the scouting staff, it's one of the things each year we try and go back and look at, okay, what's this, what's that, and compare guys. And, you know, they get into the league now. It's a different atmosphere that we're getting players from. Now they're getting paid in college. They're transferring 2-3 schools. You know, it's how do we dig and find that information? How do we find out about the core of the players? Really the thing that we really want to dig in now, because it's going to require us to the way the conditions are.
I think it's easier now, almost, to find out the personality of a player. Because now, instead of just going to one college, you've got three different. For a lot of these guys, like if you're drafted Dylan Gabriel, you go to UCF, you go to OU, to go to Oregon. You can find out different things. How was he on the way out when he didn't get playing time? Mm. Was he a jackass or not? As opposed to just going to the Oregon guy,
yeah,
where he played 4 years and you only have one set of opinions.
The only challenge I've heard scouts talk about with that, the issue there, is that basically a former school, you don't know if they're giving you a bad opinion because they're bitter about a player leaving or because there was a genuine issue. And so it muddies things a little bit. But either way, I mean, Will McClay there, that seems to reflect again. It almost sounds like we're back to right kind of guy mentality with some of this player building, because he's talking about different coaches emphasize it more. And clearly with Schottenheimer talking about the culture, he says they're looking at football character a lot closer this time around.
Matt Eberflus and Nick Sorensen officially joined the staff as DC and special teams. We'll talk Cowboys and NFL playoffs with Andrew Whitworth. Whale alert, as Peyton booked him for 9:20 this morning for the Hump Day edition.
Hump Day.
We have the Jordan rules, and now do we have the Mahomes rules? And there's already a chip in the football around the rest of the National Football League with Sean, RJ, and Roberto next.